I was actually in Philadelphia when An Exaltation of Larks had its East Coast premiere, and heard the Tokyo Quartet perform it. It's a real delight. And I know sometimes you'll have, you know, a piece that is named like Quartet Number 2. Or, you know, that you'll have. And I guess this is actually how one describes a group of larks.
Larks, yeah. That's what a group of larks is called, exactly.
So I was curious, how did you hear this term, and have you actually ever seen an Exaltation of Larks?
Well, you know what? I don't think I've ever seen an Exaltation of Larks. I probably, there was a book that came out at one point back in the late 90s that was, I think it was a collection of photos of groups of animals and birds, and they gave the whatever the proper name was for a collection of the animals. And I was so struck by the sound of just the phrase, an exaltation of larks, because I thought to myself, what a great sort of, it sounds like celebrating birds. And it just somehow seemed appropriate when I was writing a piece for the Tokyo String Quartet. It popped into my head, and it stayed in my head, which is usually a sign to me that I should be pursuing the idea. So it's kind of the singing quality of strings, the string quartet.
And now how poetic that the Lark String Quartet has taken it up and recorded it.
It's true. It's so true because, you know, my association with the Lark Quartet goes back quite a long ways, actually. So it's somehow very, very appropriate that they've taken the piece up, and they've actually been playing it quite a bit.
I know the second work on the disc is actually one that was written for the Larks and Gary Graffman. And I imagine that knowing who it's for and having the, you know, knowing the players probably helps in the composition.
It does. And, you know, I have to say in the scenes from the Poet's Dreams, the biggest challenge was writing for Gary Graffman because he pretty much only plays with his left hand. And so it's one thing to have piano with a string quartet in a typical piano quintet fashion, but if there's a limitation of how do you make a piano sound full with just one hand, you really have to stop and think about the acoustics of the piano and what makes the texture not sound like it's just one voice. You have to definitely work to make it sound like multiple voices or something that has an implied fullness, either harmonically or with a rhythm moving against each other. And of course, I looked at like quite a bit of left-hand literature, but the primary piece I looked at was Ravel's Left-Hand Concerto. I mean, that's a great guide on how to make the piano sound like you're playing with two hands, actually. And I think Ravel, when he played that piece for the commissioner, he actually played the piano part with two hands. I think for him it's so unchallenging. So I really took a close look at that when figuring out what would work for Mr. Graffman. And boy, he plays the heck out of it. It's kind of been amazing to watch it through the years. That piece goes all the way back to like 1999. So it's been around a little while, and he has played it quite a lot. So, and of course, when a musician plays something quite a bit, it changes over time. It actually becomes a part of them, which is really wonderful for a composer to hear.
The titles, again, are just really delightful. In fact, I had to look up because I remembered the phrase Summer Shimmers, and I had to go back and go, oh, that's right, there was actually a woodwind quintet.
Yeah, years later, I did do a version for woodwind quintet and piano, actually for, if I remember correctly, it was some sort of festival with adult amateur musicians, and we decided that one movement might make a nice thing for the musicians to actually play. So, but scenes, and it's so funny, to be quite honest, some of the scenes from the Poet's Dreams came about for me having insomnia around the time I was writing it. So I think I was up late one night, really late. It was probably the wee hours in the morning thinking about writing this piece. And I thought to myself, gee whiz, what kind of dreams do poets have? Are they different from our dreams? It's kind of a strange thing to contemplate.
Again, the titles are so evocative, and the music, the contrasts are incredibly beautiful, and you know, the last movement just really runs, and creates for me very, very wonderful images of dancers.
Right, right. Good. That's exactly what I want.
Speaking of images, the last work is sort of a Messiaen quartet for the end of time plus viola, or I guess string quartet, piano and clarinet, however you want to look at it. Again, the contrasts, and I think It's a wonderful idea that a light coming inward and light coming outward might have different sounds and creates indeed different images.
Yeah, you know, this is an interesting thing. Some people might actually hear that first movement and recognize it a little bit, because I tried an experiment that painters actually often do. And this was suggested by someone after my orchestra piece, Blue Cathedral, was premiered. They wanted me to take a look at Monet's paintings of haystacks, but also there's a series of cathedrals. It's the same cathedral, basically, in different light. And I thought, how come we don't have to do that as composers? It might be kind of interesting to explore that. So I actually went back in the first movement and made an attempt to try to do a similar thing with the music of Blue Cathedral. This was really, really, it turned out to be much harder than I thought, because Blue Cathedral itself has loads of musical lines running at the same time. Sometimes there are as many as 16 different lines running. And if you only have like five or six players, there are really serious limitations. So what I did was I took some of the musical material from Blue Cathedral and tried to figure out a way to do something in a somewhat similar shape using some of the material, but recast them in a new light. And that's kind of the thing that spurred the idea of light inward and outward, you know, refracted, the way it breaks and bends. It was extremely difficult to write, though. It was a great challenge artistically, but I don't know if I would do it again. And I think moving notes around sonically is probably very different than just doing a flat-out painting where you're mixing colors, but it's one-dimensional. It doesn't have to go through other people in the making of the art. So it's an interesting sort of challenge. I'm glad I did it, because it's always intriguing to see how other people's art forms and genres can influence your own.
I've been talking to composers where they've talked about having everyone write music on the same poem, you know, but not being in touch with folks.
Right. That's actually, it's great to hear. We love doing it with students, actually, at Curtis. That's something we do fairly frequently. And it's kind of shocking how different the end results would be. But it makes sense, because, you know, everyone reads a poem and they kind of take their own thought away with it. You know, it's their own interpretation based on their own experience. And so the poem may have very different meanings from one person to the next.
Well, it's a wonderful new release with the Lark Quartet, and these pieces are dynamic. I think they're a great representation. We've heard so many wonderful orchestral pieces. Someone might really enjoy the violin concerto, but I think being able to hear these sometimes a little more intimate pieces show another side of your composition.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, oddly enough, John, this is kind of strange, but this is actually the predominant side of my composition, strangely enough. I have actually many more chamber works than I do orchestral. It's just that the orchestral stuff gets much bigger press. It tends to get covered more. But I've always loved writing in the chamber form, because there's something about it that's so intimate. You can do a lot with the chamber group, because you know that they're actually going to really have time to rehearse it, which you don't always encounter that in a situation where you're with an orchestra. I mean, sometimes you're taking a real chance with orchestras because you don't really know how much time you're going to have. And you know, for young composers, I think writing for chamber groups is probably the best way to go, because if you master that, it's a little easier to deal with the orchestra, strangely enough. It's just trying to figure out how to get your ideas out on the page and covered by just a few musicians. It's its own sort of challenge.
Well, I wanted to ask, and this is sort of in reference to an Exaltation of Larks, and also maybe looking towards the new In the Shadow of Sirius that's coming up this next month with the Cyprus String Quartet, because you've written for them before, with their wonderful series, Call and Response. And this is all music that's dealing with poets. And I was going to ask, this is a new lovely piece that's going to have soprano with string quartet.
Right. And it's quite different writing for voice and string quartet, because you have to think a lot more about the text, and there a lot more stuff gets locked in because you have a certain speed the text needs to occur in to make it make sense. And so there's not as much flexibility in terms of the tempi, but you've got a whole other color realm. The human voice does amazing things. And I know Chris Brandis, I've heard her sing a lot of new music through the years. I'm trying to think, I don't think she's ever done anything of mine, but I've been in enough places where she has been singing that I've really enjoyed her music. Her music fits beautifully for kind of a chamber setting as well. And, you know, it's nice because I know the Cypress Quartet pretty well. I mean, the last piece I wrote for them was literally 10 years ago, which is hard to believe. It's hard for me to believe that was actually 10 years ago, but it was. So it's kind of nice to be able to come back and work with them again and kind of craft a piece that fits them.
I'm always curious when you return to a genre. I mean, obviously, this is different because it has soprano. But are there things that were in Exaltation or Impressions or some of the earlier quartets that then you can decide to explore? Or are there times that you're going, oh, gosh, I can't do this again. I need to break out of this pattern, or I need to break
right.
out of
you
this.
Know, that's actually a really good question. I think the thing is I write so much music that I tend not to think like that. I'm so focused on the piece I'm writing on at the moment. And this piece for Cypress was one of the last things I actually wrote before I started the opera. So, because I knew I was going to have to get anything else I was writing out of the way. So the piece was actually completed quite a while ago, believe it or not, the Cypress piece. But I had voices foremost on my mind because I knew I was going to be writing for voice. But I have a tendency not to sit down and try to compare the previous pieces I've written. And that probably is a necessity just because I'm usually plowing into the next piece on a fairly quick basis. There's not a lot of delay between the pieces that I write. I mean, I may finish a piece one day and literally the next day start the next piece. So I guess self-reflecting probably doesn't happen too much. But what does happen is I hear pieces that I've written and then I learn from them about what does and does not work. And so I guess I kind of carry that forward, or at least I hope I do, in the pieces that I'm writing. Yeah, I mean, even now that I'm going back and looking at this piece for Cypress, now that I've written an entire half of an opera, I'm viewing the voice differently, and I'm thinking, oh, do I need to adjust this? I'm not sure this actually works. So I feel more knowledgeable just from the experience of living through the writing of a whole bunch of vocal music and then going back to something that I wrote before I started that process. Because that has kind of altered my thinking and the way I see, I guess.
We're speaking with Jennifer Higdon, who has a wonderful release out on Bridge Records with the Lark Quartet. This next month, she has a world premiere with the Cypress Quartet. And just earlier this winter, Chamber Music of Jennifer Higdon came out on Albany Records that had two world premiere recordings on it.
Yeah.
For wonderful wind instruments, a sax sonata that I didn't know, and some really pretty trumpet songs.
That's right. I know that's something totally different. That was fun. That disc actually came out as a part of a residency I did at the University of Wyoming a couple years ago. And it was during the 9-10 school season. I can't believe it's that far back. It just seems like it was yesterday. But I made four trips out to the university and worked on each trip with a different group in the school. A new music festival chamber. There was a trip just for the orchestra concert, one for the choir, one for the bands. So I got to know everyone out there quite well. And the faculty put together this disc, and I think it came out great. I mean, I'm really, really pleased. And I was happy that we kind of had some sort of a record of the years spent together, because I also traveled with a choir out to a big choir convention that occurred in Seattle. So I feel like I really got to know the students and the faculty there.
Well, we know you've been in Cincinnati and have some more things. I know our listeners are going to be looking for Spring for Music, and you have a triple concerto that's quite unique, I think, that the Baltimore Symphony is playing.
That's right. Yeah, and actually, I think you were at the premiere when it was done here in
Philadelphia. Yeah.
I think one of the great pictures of you and me in the Kimmel Center is from that premiere. Yeah, that's the Concerto 4-3, which is kind of a classical bluegrass hybrid. Very different. Fits on a classical concert, but it has a lot of characteristics from bluegrass music, written for Time for Three, which is for two violins and bass solo. So I'm super excited about getting to do that concert, and to do it in Carnegie, because the sound's always so good there. But just kind of the Spring for Music Festival, which I think is just one of the most cool aspects. Whoever dreamed that up was really thinking big, but also kind of an empowerment for orchestras who might not normally get a chance to go to Carnegie. And for audiences, because the tickets are discounted too. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's such a nice variety of the music. The programming is not normal programming, so that's also kind of a treat. So there are a lot of win-win situations around that Spring for Music Festival. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a lot of fun, and it's neat to hear orchestras you might not normally hear in Carnegie, and music, as you said, that you may not necessarily think but are going to be fabulous in that space.
Right, right.
Well, I guess I'd end asking about how you and Gene Shear are doing with Cold Mountain. And I guess you said you were taking a little bit of a break looking towards a thing, but you're actively writing the opera?
Yeah, I am, really. I've been in the thick of writing the opera. We had a workshop in the, I guess it was the beginning of December, the first act, and the workshop went fantastic. I'm really, really enjoying it. It's a totally different thing than instrumental music. Because maybe it's just thinking about the storyline and kind of the emotional world of each one of the characters as they appear and how those emotional worlds evolve over a certain time span where the characters are in basically a lot of situations where people are dying and people are falling in love. It's the typical opera scenario. Lots of people dying, lots of people falling in love. And writing for a voice again in an operatic setting is really different than writing instrumental music. And I'm having a great time kind of exploring the genre and trying out things. It's been fantastic. I mean, I'm already kind of like looking around for the next possible opera subject, which I guess that means it's going well. We'll see if I survive it all the way to the end. But I'm having a good time. And I'm kind of enjoying working with so many singers. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah. Well, it's such a rich genre, and I think we're all really looking forward to hearing it.
Actually, I wanted to give a shout-out to the School for Creative and Performing Arts in Cincinnati. The kids there's a children's choir there that's going to be premiering a piece, believe it or not, right before the Spring for Music Festival for middle school, part of the Choral Quest series that the American Composers Forum is running, where they get composers who normally write for professional organizations like orchestras to write a little choir piece for really young singers. So I've been rehearsing with them, and it's a lot of fun. I love their enthusiasm and their kind of their wisdom, the wisdom that comes with youth. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
They're so enthusiastic. It's really great to see. It just makes you smile. So I have to admit, I'm maybe one of the luckiest composers on the planet. I get to write for people like Santa Fe Opera, but I also get to write for the School of Creative and Performing Arts Children's Choir. So.
Oh, man.
It's not as different as it gets, but they're both so rewarding. They really are.
Oh, yeah. Is it SSA? Or?
It is. It's SSA. I think they may have divided it. It may be SSA. I don't know if it's SAA. It's kind of funny the way they have you actually mark the staves as 1, 2, 3.
Oh, okay.
Because they can't really tell when the boys' voices are going to start changing, and therefore they don't really know how many males they're going to have in the choir. So it's kind of a guessing game, actually.
Right.
Yeah, so it's slightly different notation. It's just there to kind of accommodate the possibility that it may all be girls singing it, or it may not be. So I love their enthusiasm, and their questions are really good. And one of the kids told me the other day, I've been here at SCPA my entire life. And I said, oh, really? I said, what grade are you? And he said, I'm in, like, third grade now. And I was like, oh, okay. His whole life. But he was so earnest. It was really just incredibly sweet. I was very moved by it. So it's good to see young performers. And, you know, the piece can be hard, but they don't know that it's hard, so they don't even think. They can only think about it. They're like, well, let's just do it. If you don't tell them, they don't notice. They just plow right on through it. So,
oh, yeah.
It's very cool. It really is.
Well, and I know folks, I've heard of stories from friends who were like, oh, I was in the premiere of Chichester Psalms when, you know, Bernstein.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and that stuck with them. They were like, oh, yeah, you know, Mr. Bernstein was very, you know, very serious, you know.
Wow.
You know, and so I imagine that some of these youngsters are going to grow up and say, I was at the premiere of this Jennifer Higdon
piece. That's totally cool. I hadn't thought of it like that, but it is kind of a neat situation. And, you know, it's also cool because they help me understand what works for them and what would make a better piece for them, which is just as important, you know. So in a certain way, their feedback will help me to write a better piece for all kinds of young choirs that'll do the piece, and I think that's actually a pretty important thing. So I told them I was appreciating them teaching me how to do this, because in a sense, they are teaching me how to do this. It's very sweet, actually.
Oh, man. Well, that's something I think listeners will be delighted with. And who knows, maybe they'll have it downloadable, or maybe someone here in San Antonio, we have a couple of children's choir. Maybe it will lead to a performance here.
Yeah, that sounds good. That sounds good.
Oh, man. Well, Jennifer, it's great to talk to you. Thanks so much.
You're quite welcome, John. It's a real pleasure, as always, hon.